Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA Simple Actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 4, the second part of inventory, fear and sex. Please welcome our panel. We have Ebony from Downtown Young and Sober and Grant from Simple Action. I will read the first paragraph on page 67, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Page 67. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble.
Hey, y'all, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Ebony.
Hey, Ebony.
Man, my home group is Downtown Young and Sober, which meets on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. off of Granby. I have not had a drink since Friday the 13th, November 2015. I have a sponsor. I have the privilege of sponsoring others by taking them through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have a service position inside and outside of my home group. So as soon as I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first thing I think is like, what if I was new? What if this was my first meeting? And I always laugh because I was the girl, we're talking about fear. I was the girl who thought I was not afraid of anything except for the obvious things like spiders and heights and enclosed spaces, you know? And so now it's taken a whole different shift where I realize that I am afraid of absolutely everything, you know? And so what does this have to do with my alcoholism? It doesn't have a whole lot to do with my drinking, honestly. It has a whole lot to do with the spiritual malady. It has a whole lot to do with how I react to life. It has a whole lot to do with why I love the effect produced by alcohol. You know, I'm a girl who, growing up, there wasn't much to be afraid of. But if you asked me, I would have given you a long list of all of these things that were going wrong, all of the things that could possibly go wrong. And you name it, I was afraid of it. So I walk into Alcoholics Anonymous all of a sudden on accident because people around me thought my drinking was becoming too serious. And so at my first meeting, I remember just sitting in the room, putting my head down, scared to death, absolutely unsure if anybody in that space knew what I was going through. You know, I was crying the whole time. I don't know what they talked about at the meeting. I just remember where the meeting was, but I do remember how I felt. And I felt misunderstood. I felt unseen, and I felt alone. You know, and those are all things that I felt my entire life, that when I drank, it kind of let me ignore all of that stuff. You know, and so you know, I stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. I get a sponsor. I take those suggestions. And I think it's very important for me to say all of that stuff and qualify in that I'm a girl who loves the effect. I'm a girl that when I start, I can't stop. And that when I try to stop, I don't. I cannot on my own power. I do not have the power to stop drinking. And I came to believe that in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I start taking some suggestions of working with a sponsor, and we're going through the steps in the 12 and 12. I like to be very specific with that. The first time I went through the steps was in the 12 and 12. And so we're going through the steps, and we get to the inventory. I made this decision. I did the third step. I made a decision that I'm gonna turn my thoughts and my actions, because that was more palatable for a drunk like me. I don't know what my will in my life. That seems long term, and I don't like commitment. So we'll see thoughts and actions. I was like, okay, I'll do that. Water it down for a drunk like me, because I like to think it's a little bit easier. And I sat on my fourth step. And we did not do the fourth step out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And let me tell you, that made a difference. And I'm not saying for the good. We used a worksheet, which was nice, and it was based off of this layout and this information, but it's much easier when I'm just writing down like, oh yes, check mark here, check mark here, check mark there. You know, and I would hear other people talk about their experience with taking inventory. You know, but soon I got a sponsor that took me through the fourth step using the directions in the Big Book, which made a huge difference. You know, so we're at this part where it talks about notice the word fear. You know, and so I'm taking this inventory, and I see that fear is everywhere for me. You know, I'm afraid that I'm not going to jump into the actual fear part, but in my resentments, I'm afraid that my mom was right, that I'm not going to be a good wife when I grow up. I'm resentful at her for saying this. You know, I'm also afraid that I won't be a good wife. You know, I have all of these contradictory fears, and I go about it by like self-will. And I love this part where it says it's set in motion. Like my fears control the way I react to life around me. My fear controls how I act around you. My fear controls how vulnerable I am and how unvulnerable, I know, how guarded I am. You know, so I love that it didn't make sense. I had to have a sponsor break this down to me, that my fear really is the reason that I always feel isolated and cut off from everybody. You know, and so I love this, because I always felt like I was the victim and life was treating me wrong. Circumstances were happening to me, and not that I was causing them. But this was the first glimpse, actually, of being able to see like, wow, I really am causing this stuff. And it's not the alcohol. It's not the liquid I'm putting in my body. And this is where I start to see more and more what the spiritual malady really is and how big of a role it plays in my life. Thanks.
Thanks, Terrence. I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date was March 19th, 2010. Simple Actions is my home group. Involved in the home group and try to be involved in AA at large. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't even know what I was doing. Let's just be honest about that, right? Like, I think plenty of us come in here. Like, I came here because I got drunk once again when I was trying to be the designated driver. And, right, like, that's just powerlessness, isn't it? I'd planned to go out and not drink, drive people safely, prove that I didn't have a drinking problem. I had already been given a meeting directory by a therapist a couple months earlier, which I promptly stuck in the back and the bottom under the filing, in the filing cabinet, right? Like, take that under advisement if I need to. Right? I didn't know what, like, none of this stuff made sense when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're new, don't be surprised that none of what we says may say up here. But Ebony's right. It's a spiritual malady. Like, this is really about how am I disconnected from God? And when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't want anything to do with God. I had thoroughly disregarded God and made more than my fair share of arguments against God. And so this whole thing just seemed repulsive to me, right? And the truth was, is I was just really terrified of everything. Like, I got tattoos to prove how tough I was. If you dared me to do something, I would do it to prove how cool or outrageous I was. I didn't do things because I actually was like competent and capable and amazing or interesting. I did them because I was terrified that you would judge me, and I had to prove that I was, you know, worth noticing, right? Like, that was really what it boiled down to. The truth was, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, was I knew nothing about that reality. I didn't know anything about that until I wrote inventory, right? Until I sat down with pen and paper, and my sponsor sat there on the other side of the table at the Dunkin' Donuts and watched me fill out the forms, like Ebony mentioned, right? Like, I had those little Joe and Charlie tape forms, and I filled them out, and I had no idea what I was doing, but I just kept answering the questions. And my sponsor would be like, "Oh, are you stuck on something?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm not really sure if I'm afraid of relationships." And he was like, "Well, if you thought of it, write it down." And I just kept writing, right? And I didn't realize how I was afraid of getting in relationships with people, because I just didn't know how to interact. And what I found out later, as I went through the character defect part of it in the fifth step, was that I objectified women, I mistreated women, which we're going to talk about more in the latter part of this. And so I didn't have good relationships. In fact, I was actually meditating on that idea the other day after I shared about it in a meeting, and I realized, like, I objectified men too, right? Like, I was like, you're either between me and the girl that I want to get with, and you're going to help me get to the other side of that, or you're going to get out of the way, right? Like, I didn't treat people like other people in my path. And, you know, I remember like having a fling. Let's use fling, because that's probably the most accurate description, with a roommate after she got into it with her boyfriend. And all along, I was only nice to her boyfriend because I wanted to get with his girlfriend, right? Like, not because I wanted to be friends with that guy. And that's how spiritually sick I was, right? You know, at work, I'm always terrified that my boss is going to come around and fire me. Right. So I'm always looking busy. I may not be doing anything, but I'm always looking busy. Right. And like, at the time that I first got sober, like, I worked in social work, and we were busy all the time. But most of the time I was like BSing with the people around me who were trying to get their work done, and half the day crying at my desk because I'm like falling apart because I have alcoholism and I don't know what to do about it. And driving home from work every day thinking everything that looks larger than my car looks like a good way out of this life, right? And that's the kind of person I came to alcohol alone. Like, I feel alone. Like, I had a relationship, I had family, people who cared about me, but I still felt alone. I felt apart from everybody else. And I came to find out that, like, by doing this inventory, it was that line, like, you know, that line that at some point in time, we did something to start the ball rolling, to set ourselves apart from other people. I was dishonest with you or her or them about my motives in this interaction, this relationship, this professional agreement. And because of that, now I'm hurt because you're coming to me to say, "Well, you said you were going to do this." Well, no, I didn't really agree to that. I just went along with it because then, it, you know, you'd be off my back, right? And really all I was worried about was how I was going to get, right? Like, how was I going to get out of the door at work in time to make it to the bar for happy hour? How was I going to get out of the door from the apartment with the girlfriend going in tow, hopefully, in time to make the drinking event with my pals, right? And hoping that she wouldn't leave, and she would leave, and then I would be all butthurt that she left, but I'm going to keep drinking anyways, right? Like, I remember catching the trolley in Philadelphia after too many drinks at the bar. Again, we're like, we went out for a bowling event for what, like work, and then I'm in trouble again, right? And the reason I was in trouble again was because I made a commitment to her that we would go and then we would leave and I wouldn't cause trouble. And I started to cause trouble and we got in an argument and then she left, right? And then I'm on the trolley. Like, again, I didn't process the whole fact that I was terrified about the event in the moment that it happened until I came here. But I was terrified that she was going to leave, that she was going to give up on me all the time, right? And it made for more drinking. Why is all of that important? It made for more drinking. It was just, they were just coins that would throw in a hat to say, I need a drink again. I need a drink again. Not drink 15. I need one more. And once I started one more, then it was out of control again. And that's why this inventory was so important for me. Because until I got all of it out on paper and got real with a sponsor about it, I wasn't going to move past it. I was going to either drink again or kill myself. And I was thinking about that today when I was first getting sober. I think the only reason I was willing to finally just commit to getting a sponsor and doing the steps was somewhere deep down inside me, I heard people say, if you drink again, you're going to die. And I thought to myself, like, I want to die now. There is no hope for a guy like me. Like, and I wasn't as bad as other people's stories that I heard in the rooms. But for some reason, inside myself, I could hear that idea that if I'm going to drink again, I'm going to die. And all I want to do is die every day. The cards are stacked against me. I might as well do something, right? And I didn't, like I said, day one I came in here, I didn't want to do any of this. By day 120, 130, I was really ready to try something different. And it was because I was suffering.
All right. We're going to pick up on page 68. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match, pardon me, calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear.
So, you know, I've made this fear inventory and I'm seeing how, just like with my alcoholism and drinking, I can't, and my self-centeredness, I can't outthink my drinking. I can't outthink my self-centeredness. You know, I remember at first hearing like, oh, self-centered, that's the root you think of my trouble. Well, I won't be self-centered. That only lasts but for so long if you're like me. And I don't really know what it means to be the opposite. I'm going to say the opposite of self-centered. So I do what I think is a good idea. And most of the time, what I think is a good idea is rooted in my self-centeredness anyways, and because I don't know how to change my mind. You know, my mind is the center of my problem, and yet I'm relying on my mind to be the solution. Like that just sounds crazy right there. Mm-hmm. So here I am making this fear inventory, and I see that self-reliance has failed me. Like, I can't outwork my fear. I can't solve that problem. You know, I am just as powerless over my fear as I was my alcoholism, as I am of alcohol. I am powerless, period. Mm. The end. You know, my life is unmanageable, period.
the end. And so what I need is a relationship with the God of my understanding. Like for this part, this reminds me, because I'm the person who's like, thank you, God, for working on my alcoholism. I've got the career stuff now, buddy. I've got the relationship stuff now. Like, and I don't really mean it like outwardly, but if you watch how I act and you watch the things I do and the things that come out of my mouth, like I really mean, like, God, you're too busy. Take care of those people. They need you more over here. I've got this. And when I find myself all burnt up and spun around and just wasting energy uselessly and realize like, oh, maybe I should invite God into this. Like, thank God for, thank God for sponsoring. Did you invite your God into it yet? Have you prayed about it? No, actually, that's a great idea. So this right here is like, we trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. I will always crash. I will continuously run out of energy, run out of power, run out of ideas, run out of thoughts. And I'd rather put myself in God's hands and trust that process. For a while, I love reading this with other people and in big book studies, it's really important because then things get stuck in my head. And I went through this phase where I just continuously ask myself, like, well, what is the role you're assigned, Ebony? Because that's how I talk to myself. Well, what is the role you're assigned? Oh, you're supposed to just be a good friend and not tell this person how to act or what to do or make the decisions for them and just show up and love them no matter what. And like, when I do that and I love people unconditionally, then the fear of them thinking I'm a bad friend kind of takes care of itself. That fear of being alone and that fear of people loving me so much they are constantly dependent on me, those two contradictory fears, when I just ask myself, what role am I assigned here? It takes away all of the pressure and all of the stress. And I need that because I don't have many quiet moments in my mind. But when I'm relying on my God, man, I get a break. I can breathe. And I love this end of the paragraph because for a long time, I'm that girl who likes to manipulate words in my favor. And I was the like, oh, he'll enable me to match calamity with serenity. But there's like a whole that I cut out all the other part before that, to the extent that I do what my higher power would have me do and humbly rely on him. Then I'm enabled to match calamity with serenity. For a really long time, even during COVID, we found out my mom had dementia. And one of my biggest fears was, okay, well, my grandma had dementia, turns into Alzheimer's. Then my mom had it. If my mom gets it, then I'm going to have it. And then I'm going to forget I'm an alcoholic. And then I'm going to be alone because no one's going to love me. Then I'm going to drink. And then I'm just wasting all my time. That's how the train in my brain works. And I did this and I talked to a friend about it. And she's just like, Ebony, you're part of a fellowship of people who love you. And if that happens, and all the time I'm not showing up for my mom, who actually has just been diagnosed with dementia, and not being an active member of the family. Like, what would my God have me be? My God would have me be a daughter. My God would have me be someone that my family can lean on. My God would have me be supportive. And when I'm supporting them, other people are supporting me. But I didn't know that until I actually started opening my mouth and talking. And then all of these resources just kind of popped up and happened. And that fear has not gone away, which is why I'm going to skip some of this, but when instead we let him demonstrate through us what he can do, like when I do that, amazing things happen. I have other friends who are going through similar situations who can now talk to me. And it's just like, how'd you do that? I'm not doing anything. My God is doing it. Like I can talk about that, which is crazy because I was the girl who would apologize for talking about God. I didn't want to be that weirdo talking about her God closet and all her prayers and her meditations. But now I'm the girl who's like, oh, well, I talked to God this morning. I pray the whole time while I'm driving to work because I know it's a Friday. It's about to be a full moon and my middle school kids are about to be crazy. So I'm just going to, I pray the entire time while I'm driving to work, clenching the steering wheel, and then the directions at the very end of this paragraph. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. Just thinking about the power of a God that can remove my fear. In my experiences, a lot of times it's not like, oh, he takes it away, my fear completely. But what happens is I ask my God to remove my fear. And when I direct my attention, that fear is like all the way in the background. And I'm directed towards how I should act, how I should treat people, usually what I should not say, because it's the stuff that comes out of my mouth that usually causes the most problems. And I commence to outgrow fear, that my faith starts to grow. My fear doesn't disappear, but I get to outgrow it. And I get to react to life differently in that way. Thanks.
I was thinking about how when I was first getting sober, I used to go to all these discussion meetings, and they would always bring up, you know, faith and fear. Those are always like a real popular topic. You know, you can't have fear in the face of faith, or only truly fearful people also have enough faith to be courageous, or something like that. Like they all these like fancy little sayings, but. And I don't want to poo-poo that. I just want to illustrate that the sayings by themselves don't mean anything. It's my experience of having to write out this fear inventory and then face these fears and outgrow them that is faith. And even more importantly, what it says at the top of the reading, you know, trust and reliance on the power of God. Like, that's really what puts me in a position to be able to face any and all circumstances. I wholeheartedly to believe, and I know many people who've been sober for any period of time would probably echo the same idea. I wholeheartedly believe that if it wasn't that the experience of having fear, writing about fear, and then talking with my sponsor, and then facing that, even if it's like, oh, I gotta go sit in front of this employer and tell them that I stole $30,000 worth of their product, and I'm willing to make amends and regular payments, and like, that's just like impossible. I don't even make $30,000 a year. I don't know how I'm going to make those payments. Sponsor being like, you're just going to do it. Okay. And we're going to make whatever arrangements are agreeable between the party you owe money to and yourself. And then going and having fear, and then the faith that God is going to show me a way to do whatever I have to do in this situation, and then do it. Right. And then come out the other side. And miraculously, it wasn't as bad as I thought. The arrangement ended up being not any, like, the employer determined that I didn't owe them that much money because they owed me money for time I worked that they didn't pay me for. And then the whole thing calculated out. And then I owed them a little bit of money and I paid them a little bit of money. And my sponsor was like, that's great. And you know what? I'm going to have you commit some money to charity, because I think your employer was a little too kind to you in this situation. Right. And he was right. Like, my employer was probably a little bit just like, I don't want to deal with this guy and what he's coming to me with in this number. I don't know. Like, God did something for me that I couldn't do for him too. Right. And in spite of the fear, I walked that off and I developed a new level of faith. And then my experience has shown that I should have trust and reliance on God in that scenario. I was talking to an old timer recently, and we were talking about this idea. And he's like, I think you really need to work more on trust in these situations. You already have faith. And I was like, wow, like, I hadn't even thought about that, because when I came here, I was so anti-God, as I mentioned at the top. I wasn't in a position to have faith. So I've been working on faith for a long time, right? Been working on it a long time. Like, my favorite pinch hitter in the world is God. And if you don't know what that means is I don't really rely on God or trust God until my ass is on fire. Like, I'm in some real trouble, or I'm having a real hard time with something, and then I'm looking for God, right? I mean, that's grown over time to this like constant, steady, like prayer, meditation, reading, dedication, devotion, and action in the direction towards God. But I didn't start out that way. I started out like, okay, I can't pay this bill this week. Let's throw up a flare. I've been sober for 18 months and I can't figure out how to do this thing at work without getting into trouble. Let's throw up a flare, right? Like, that's what I got when I come to this thing the first time. And I've done enough inventory that I've developed trust in God. And so going back to that story,
I had a really big test recently, monumental test, probably one of the most important experiences. I went into it fearful. And I did all these things. I did all the prayer and the meditation and talking to my sponsor and talking to other AAs about it. And it was just kind of like every other experience with fear. I had fear, but I also had faith and reliance on a power greater than myself to get me through it, right? And it was very akin to an experience I had when I first got sober applying to school, because I was trying to get into medical school. And I had failed to do so the year before because I was both too drunk to get the paperwork in on time and too irresponsible to get the paperwork in on time. So I didn't get in. And I, like, my sponsor, I didn't get in last time. I don't know if I should try this again. He goes, well, what happened? And I was like, well, I turned the paperwork in on this date and this blah, 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 blah. He's like, let me stop you right there. It sounds like you turned the paperwork in late. Maybe you should just turn the paperwork in early this time and see what happens. Right? Like, I've learned, like, part of learning to have faith in the face of fear is also listening to other people's experiences and doing something that I hadn't considered, or doing something that I thought was I'll be a frank, when he told me that the first time, I was like, that's a stupid idea. Only silly people turn things in early. But it wasn't hard because I had done it all the year before. All I had to do was change some dates and some names and make it more current. And it wasn't hard to turn the paperwork in early, right? And I got it. Like, I went from not being accepted to being accepted to a bunch of different schools. And my new fear was, which one do I pick? Right? And again, it was just, where's God in it all? I went to God and God showed me a way. And everything's been gravy since. But it's not without fear. There's no absence of fear. I've just grown into a new level of faith, trust, and reliance that makes living with things that I'm fearful about possible. And I'm more willing to get honest about that fear with people around me because of that, right? Like, I know that if I tell you the truth about what I'm fearful about, you're going to give me some experience on how to get through it, and it's going to be okay, even though I might have to deal with some fear for a little while. And for that, I'm really blessed and grateful that, like, I learned that here in AA. Back to you.
All right. We're still on page 68. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there. But above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them?
I don't know what we can do about them. I love this. I don't have a whole lot to share on this one paragraph because I think this is really important for me. God directed my thinking. I think it's really important because it right here, it tells me, like, we stay out of this controversy. I'm not the arbiters of anyone's sex relation or their conduct. You know, I love the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and meetings are amazing, but I think it's more important for me to rely on the directions, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. There are a lot of statements that confused me going to meetings. And it was like, don't date anybody until you can get a plant or keep it alive, or you have a year, or you've worked the steps, or all of these things. And I know they come out of some great experience. But what I have found most helpful for me is to do this inventory. And when I get to carry this message to other alcoholics and I get to sit and work with others, this is very important for me to remember. I didn't have anyone telling me like, don't date him, don't do this, don't go there, don't do that. I just had someone say like, all right, well, let's see what happens. You know, and I get to be that person today. I think it's really important for me to remember, like, we all have sex problems, period. I the book over and over again, it talks about the problem, the solution, how we live this solution. And so I think it's really, it's amazing that right here, it tells me to go ahead and take yourself out of it, Ebony. This is not what we're about. We're not going to shame you, Ebony. We're not looking for numbers and names and locations and positions. Like, we're not here for that. We're just asking you, we're going to get down to the core. Defective relations with other people is a lot of my problem. My main problem, actually, because I don't know how to do that.
No, this reading reminds me of all the times of people in the first year, like you said, just that idea of, you can't date for a year. You shouldn't make any major decisions for a year. Don't get any major. Okay. In the first year, I was still with my girlfriend. We sort of fixed our relationship. We got engaged, right? Like all the first year, I hadn't done any steps yet. Okay. I'm not giving you that as advice. I'm telling you that as those were all bad decisions. Okay. I love this. There's a speaker. If you want to know more about it, I'll tell you about him afterwards. But I will tell you, he has this really great story where he's talking to a sponsee, and the sponsee, you know, has been like stalking three different girlfriends before he gets sober. And as he first gets sober for a little while, and like he keeps nearly getting arrested for stalking people. And he comes to him and he goes, yes, I think I need to get into this other relationship right now rather than do the steps. And he goes, what do you have to bring to a relationship? Stalking, right? Like that epitomizes me when I first get sober. Like I don't have any relationship skills. I already told you that, you know, at the beginning of my share, like I came here with like objectification of other people to get what I want, which is mostly to get drunk and have sex, right? Like I don't have like any emotional relationship skills. I'm a hot mess, right? So yeah, they should tell me like probably good idea to stay out of relationships. But I really think, like, again, having sponsored lots of guys who I'm with Ebony, I'm not here to tell you what to do or not to do, but I've watched lots of guys start the steps, meet a girl, usually a girl who's either not sober or struggling to get sober. And then they have a like wonderful connection, which is called you both have alcoholism. And then they disappear. And I've seen it enough times to say, I'm not going to tell you what to do. You can do whatever you want to do. But if you have what I have and your life depends on it, maybe there's things that are more important than a relationship. And I can't convince you of that because you're an alcoholic. So you want what you want when you want it, and you're going to do what you can get to get ease and comfort. All I can do is identify with them and say, hey, I know how you feel. I felt the same way. And I felt crazy sitting in a room. Like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And for whatever reason, I heard them say you shouldn't do it. And I didn't listen to them, but then I came back around and listened to them. Right. And that's how I got here. And so it's just, to me, that paragraph is just a warning, like, don't try to tell anybody what to do. They're not going to listen to you anyways. But what you can do is give them some experience on why what is paramount is doing the next thing with the steps and moving forward in order to have better relationships. Because I didn't have any. I still struggle with it today.
We're going to turn over to page 69. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We ask God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good.
neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice.
So this was one of my life-changing. I don't know. This is where I got one of the biggest shifts in perspective was doing this inventory. And I think it's really important that we talk about the word conduct. That is the word that is used in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, it's not a sex inventory. It's a sex conduct inventory. How I behave in relation with other people. Because for a long time, I would just hear in my head and out my mouth, sex inventory, but that's not really what I'm looking at. That's not the root of my problem. You know, and so I'm answering these questions straightforward. Now, if you look at my book, I have them numbered because it's really important that I'm as honest and as thorough as I can when I'm going through this. And I think the biggest shift came to right here where it says, where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? Because after answering questions, I can say things like, oh, I was selfish. You know, how? Well, you know, I went and I told my boyfriend that the teacher at work told me if I was single, he would love to take me out sometime. Well, why would I do something like that? Because I want my boyfriend to know that other people want me. So you better start taking care of what you got and appreciate this greatness in front of you, you know, and that's me arousing jealousy on purpose. Like, this is how I am. I manipulate situations because this has been stuck in my head, direction, connection, and security. I'm depending on that from someone else. You know, and so I look at this and it tells me like, well, what should I have done instead? And I get to answer that. And I go through this conduct and I'm doing this over and over again. And that last question, what should I have done instead? That is how, in this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. You know, I would hear people talk about it and I thought I was making a list in my journal like I did when I was a little girl. Like, oh, he's got to be cute and he's got to be wealthy and he has to have 8 houses. Like, I thought my sane, that doesn't sound very sane, Ebony. But I thought my sane and sound ideal was this list of characteristics and objects that people had to have. You know, and so what I really start to see is like, this is how whatever my sex, we subjected each relation to this, was it selfish or not? And asking God to mold my ideals and help me live up to them. Mm-hmm. So what I start to see is like, oh, I should have communicated clearly. I should have respected their boundaries. I should have got to know them. I should have built a relationship. All of these things are things I should have done instead. You know, I should have spoke up for myself. I should have whatever, you know, fill in the blank. And I, so now I have this list, you know, it's like, oh, wow, man, this man's going to be amazing. I've made this list of things that my partner needs to be. And then it's like, nope, gotcha. Like, I have to be the person to grow into these ideals. These are things that I need to bring into the relationship. These are things that I bring into this partnership. And that's hard. That's hard for a person like me because I'm continuously thinking of what I want and how I feel and how to get those things, you know, instead of thinking how I can show up and what I can bring to the situation, to the partnership. And so I love this reminder, whatever my ideals turn out to be, I must be willing to grow toward it. I want to say, or else, you know, or else I'm going to continue to have defective relations with others, or else I'm going to continue to feel lonely because I'm creating my loneliness, or else I'm going to feel unworthy because I'm looking for this hole to be filled from a place that is not the power that can actually fill it, you know? So I love this part of the inventory. I love all of it. I'm that nerd. I'm that AA. Everything on the book, I'm always like, this is my favorite part. I love this part. But it's so powerful and it has changed my life so much.
And I wish I could say it's been one and done, you know, but there are so many times, like, this is just an introduction to these tools for the first time, you know, and as I continue to grow and as I continue to walk this path, like, I get to see things that I forgot. I get to be reminded of, oh, maybe I need to add this to my sex ideals. Maybe this is something else. I didn't know this is what I need. I need to learn to be patient. That seems obvious, but I need to be patient with things like, who's going to take the clothes out of the dryer? That sounded stupid for a long time until it's keeping me up at night and I'm waking up angry in the morning about it, you know? And so this is exactly what I need. And we treat sex as we would any other problem. And for me, I hear there are no big deals. You know, I want to be like, sex, ooh, giggle, giggle. No, we treat it like any other problem. I take it to God. I invite God in my life. I ask God what I should do about it. And I follow the dictates of a higher power. And as I stumble through life and fail and mess up, like, that's okay. Because I'm still leaning into this God, and this is how I get to grow. Thanks.
Yes. I'm not going to say this is my favorite part. When I was doing the inventory and even my fist stuff, I really like the fear part, because that's the part where I get to be like afraid and I get to like get a little bit of sympathy and like resentments. It was clear. All I was trying to do was run around and get people to feel sorry for me. Mm-hmm. I was a victim of all of your circumstance, right? Like, If that's not obvious that I'm insane, like, if the world would just act better, I would do better and feel better. And then, as Ebony pointed out, like, sex, conduct, inventory, right? Like, my first step, the sheets, right? The pre-formatted sheets, they said sex and other harms, like, other people to consider, right? And then I'm, like, writing it out, and it was pretty obvious there was a series of young females that I mistreated. And then all of a sudden it's like this dude, like, they're like, I try to get with his girlfriend, I try to fill up his girlfriend, I try to take advantage of his girlfriend, I try to steal money from him. Like, then it just started to devolve, and it was obvious that, like, probably what our founders had in mind was not just sex, but like that maybe, I don't know, I would love to go back and pick their brain on like how they decided to put the word sex in the title of sex conduct inventory, but they were probably trying to get at, like, in addition to how you get along and interact with the rest of the people in the world, there's probably sexual tension involved in it. So we should probably bring that up, like, because maybe back in the 30s it was risque. I don't know, I'm making stuff up. Anyways. I just want to go back and talk to him and ask him, like, why did you decide to include that? Like, it just seems a little extra. But the truth is, for me, is like all of my relationships to other people, as I mentioned before, are centered around how are you going to get me what I want? Right? How am I going to get mine? And how are you going to help me do that? Or why are you in my way? Like, that's where I start from, and when I come here, right? And I've had to learn to be of service, to be helpful, to be honest, to be forthright, to be consistent. Like, these are all things that I had to learn to do, right? And I didn't write an ideals inventory. I know that's a thing. People write ideals inventories. I didn't write an ideals inventory. I just came to understand with sponsorship, like, these are the ways in which you can do better to prevent initiating jealousy, bitterness. What was it? Jealousy, bitterness, and suspicion, right? Like, because I do that all the time anyways, right? My current wife, like, early in our relationship, she presented me with a series of articles about fidelity, not just like relationship fidelity, fidelity in finances, fidelity in a relationship, fidelity in like social situations, fidelity in group situations, like how to be an example to the other person in your relationship that there is important a person to you as you are to yourself, and to do that wholly and honestly, right? And like, that was like
whoa, I don't know if I'm ready to handle this, right? And I had to write fresh inventory on it, right? Because I'm like, I don't know if I can tell you the whole truth about how I spend my money. Not that I do anything like egregious, but like, I think it's my money and I should not have to disclose all of my, but what it was really about is I had fear because I had debt, because I had a divorce and I had spent a bunch of money after my divorce on like toys, like motorcycles, to feel better about things. And I was irresponsible. And that's important in a relationship, to be responsible, right? And I have to be able to be honest and forthright about that. And that's why this is important to me, even though I don't like doing it, it forces me to be a better man on a regular basis. And why is that important? It's not even important because it makes me feel better. It's because it's what keeps me from drinking again, right? I don't get tight at the wrong time and get a drink. And that's what's important to me about this part.
All right. We're going to finish up on page 70. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. Y'all each have 60 seconds to finish up about inventory.
All right. I love that it always goes back to pray and follow directions for every problem that is in my life. It goes back to pray and follow directions. And I love the way this ends with how it works, leading into action. Like, I've only made a good beginning. Like, this is just a start. There is more work to be done. Thanks for letting me share.
That's exactly it, right? Like, we did this to get the truth out, to just find out the truth. Like, there's no reason to do this, to get beat up or to figure out that you're a mess. Like, you came here a mess. Like, let's just find the truth out about yourself and figure out how we're going to move forward and get closer to God. And that's 100% what we're doing here. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to pass the baskets in accordance with the seventh tradition. You can sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. We have PayPal and Venmo things in the basket. The seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements, Joe?
Please, Joe, I'm an alcoholic. Do you have any questions? See me or Ben or Tyler or Jake or, you know, a couple other people. Thanks.
Thanks, Joe.
Foy.
Hi, Foy, alcoholic.
Hey, Foy.
Hi. No candlelight this the 27th. So yeah, this Friday. The church is closed. What? So no candlelight on Friday the 27th because the church is having church stuff. Thank you.
Thanks, Foy. Anybody else?
I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Grant.
I have two announcements. This Saturday, the Virginia Beach Brunch Bunch group they meet at 9:30 on Witch Duck Road. I can give you the flyer if you need it. They have a brunch speaker meeting. It was supposed to be last Saturday. It got moved to this Saturday. Like I said, 9:30.
They'll have brunch, breakfast, and prayer. And then Walt and Harmony will be the speakers. And then the other one I was just looking down here is the gratitude breakfast. It's coming up November the 18th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Wycliffe Presbyterian, Great Neck Road, Virginia Beach. If you've never been, go. It's a fantastic experience. They have food and just a great time with fellowship and speakers. So come on up.
Alcoholic David.
Hey, David.
Also this Saturday, and I don't have the details in front of me, but if you're an Al-Anon or interested in the Al-Anon Gratitude Breakfast, that's also happening this Saturday somewhere in Virginia Beach. I've got the details in here. Come see me. Amy's going to be the AA speaker at that event.
Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Literature is available over there. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. If you're shy, please send us an email at info@simpleactions.net. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Cafe Stella. In closing, can we please thank Ebony and Grant again? Thanks to all who participated. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to come up and thank the panel personally. And someone has volunteered to read the last few paragraphs on page.
You understand God, admit your faults and commit them to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you go to the path of the May God bless you.
Thank you. We have a nice way of closing.
It is nice. I didn't throw it on the floor. I just fucked it up. That's fine.
Our Father,
and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever.
Amen.
Give us our day.